Welcome to Bewildered. I'm Martha Beck, here with Rowan Mangan. At this crazy moment in history, a lot of people are feeling bewildered, but that actually may be a sign we're on track. Human culture teaches us to come to consensus, but nature, our own true nature, helps us come to our senses. Rowan and I believe that the best way to figure it all out is by going through bewilderment into bewilderment. That's why we're here.
So, Marty, I think there's a pretty good chance that our listeners are out there going, oh, wow, I have a lot of cultural messages in my head and it's not that easy to access the voice of my true nature.
Yes.
And I don't know, they might be thinking, is there anything else that I could do other than listening to this podcast to help me learn to listen to my heart?
Well, I had this question even as a young child. I would say, I am not happy. And people would say, well, it's all in your head. And I'd be like, I know, get it out of my head. But nobody could really help me do that. And so in my 20s, I sort of made up a system to help me detach from cultural messages and connect with my true nature. And it ended up being my career as a life coach and then training people to do the same thing.
And I think that, you know, it's just like people who feel the urge to heal themselves, help others heal and heal the world, that this term life coach sort of slots into that in our culture. And people take the training to hang out a shingle and become life coaches. People take the training because it's like getting life coaching.
Yeah.
You know, and people also take the training just to learn to access their own true nature.
Yeah. It was originally just an access your own true nature course. Mm-hmm. But when you've mastered that, you really want to share it with other people and people want to be shared with, right, and they will pay you money. So if that's the way you want to go, that's why it ended up being life coach training. But it's actually Wayfinder, which is different. It's about finding your way by connecting with your true nature and steering your own course.
So if people are interested, you can Google Wayfinder Life Coach Training or go to marthabeck.com and you will find your way.
Yes, you will.
Hi, I'm Martha Beck.
And I'm Rowan Mangan, and this is another episode of Bewildered. You know us, we're the people who do a podcast for other people who are trying to figure it out.
Exactly. So, Rowie, what are you trying to figure out lately?
Well, so many things, Marty. As you know, I'm a very confused individual, just trying to live my life. But, you know, one of the things, especially in a cross-cultural sort of situation, this, I'm not from here, sometimes I don't always understand the culture, the humor, and I often have a sort of fear that I'm not understanding when someone's having a go. Now, I don't know if Americans use that expression.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's like, are you taking me for a ride? Would that make sense?
Yeah, having like, a go is more toilet related, I think.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
It's like having a go. It's like, see, part of it is I think that Americans don't really do this. Like trying to make someone believe something when, let me explain what I'm really talking about. So we do Pilates. Talked about it before a long time ago. You have a tail.
I do.
It was a whole big drama in
our lives. It doesn't stick out, people. It's just underneath.
We don't know when we said this, so you'll really have to go through the whole back catalogue. I don't know what she's talking about.
Ooh, what a treasure.
What a treasure. But I took a bit of a sabbatical from Pilates for a while, but I'm back. And it has caused me to wonder on occasion about our darling Ray, who teaches us how to do Pilates and how to strengthen our core.
He's
cores,
wonderful.
I suppose.
Ray, we love you.
I love you, Ray. But sometimes, Ray, I've got to say I wonder about you. Like, okay, so here's one of the – so he just – look, he has us do things. And he could – like, how would we know if they're real or not? We're not going to go Google it. Like, so – one of the things he has us do, and I'm taking a risk here, because if he is having a go, if he is laughing all over New Hope, Pennsylvania,
it will
about
be a
this
debacle.
He, yeah, it's just I'm just going to demonstrate how stupid we are. But anyway, so we do this one thing. We're on the floor on our little yoga mats, doing our little exercises. And then we do this one where we lie on our backs and we grab our ankles. And then we roll back like a little ball. And when we get to the sort of bit where we're on our shoulders, if that makes sense, like where our back is sort of rounded, we're holding onto our ankles, we roll back. And then when we're at the top of that, this is where I start wondering, we have to clap our feet a few times.
Mm-hmm. Three times specifically.
And he calls this the seal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as in,
or as in the seal of approval. I don't know.
Oh, there you go. But clap, you know, if you're happy and you know it, clap your feet. I just don't. not sure, Marty. I'm not sure that that's real, or because if it wasn't, like, it would just be the perfect joke to play on people, like week after week, having them clap their own feet upside down on the floor.
It would be really good. What if Ray is in dead earnest, but Joseph Pilates, the man who made this up, was just sitting at home thinking, what can I do to really mess with people's heads?
Do you think I could them to clap their
but
own
I did,
feet?
I wonder. I did have a friend who went to the doctor for a checkup and he had her strip naked and then walk around his office flapping her arms because he said it was medical for some reason. And
oh boy.
I had forgotten about that until you brought that up, and suddenly it takes on a dark and sinister tone.
Yeah. Mine was really light and fluffy, just happily clapping our feet like seals.
But your point is well taken. That if people, that's why we rebel against culture. Culture is just you. I say you have to clap your feet, and you just do it without even thinking.
Yeah, we don't rebel against the culture of Pilates enough.
No, it's time we did.
I think we should just boycott it. We should just go to our class and just sit there and go no. Clap your feet. See how you like it, buddy.
Yeah. That would be really good.
What are you trying to figure out?
I'm just thinking about the Pilates machine called the Reformer. And I think, anyway, my thing is also related to professionals that I go to for my health. It's my dental hygienist. I went and had my dental cleaning. And it is kind of a point of pride with me, only at the dentist. Everywhere else, everybody mocks and loathes me for it. But I am obsessed with flossing my teeth.
Listeners, you should see how smug this woman gets when she gets back from the dentist every time. She's like, they told me I'm fabulous again.
They don't say fabulous. They say, do you floss a lot? And I'm like, constantly. And they're like, I can tell. It's just the hygienist. It's not the dentist. But this dental hygienist said, and she cleaned my teeth with the little things, and then she has to floss my teeth for me as a kind of, that's part of the red carpet service. And anyway, so she's flossing away on my mouth, and she said, you could probably floss with your eyes closed. And I said, yes, I can. But ever since, I've been trying to figure out how she needs her eyes to floss. Do people, and this is an honest question, do most people have to look in the mirror to floss or like look at their hands or something?
Well, that's not the biggest question mark for me in that whole story, because what I can't help wondering is, is she meant to floss your teeth, or are you being taken advantage of in some way? Because that to me is a step too intimate. I wouldn't let you floss my teeth. I'm certainly not going
to
let
a
stranger
floss
do
your
it.
Teeth when you go to the dentist.
I don't think so.
Well, you pay attention because they're going to be flossing you, girl.
Oh my God. I don't want to be flossed by anyone but myself.
Well, that just ruins our romantic Valentine's evening then.
It's intimate. It's too intimate to floss someone else. No.
Yeah. So, in fact, probably she was saying that it's so intimate you probably should close your eyes. Like, you shouldn't even be present with yourself when you're
she
flossing.
Should have closed, like, turned off the lights in that little, like, room. Took to you with the floss.
I know. I can imagine her looming over me in the dark going, I'm doing this with my eyes closed.
It's a bit like that terrible meal that you have to, in France, that you have to cover your head with a serviette so God won't see you eating it. That's what it's like. It's like to floss someone else's teeth is so intimate and grotesque that you should have to turn off the lights and close your eyes before you even attempt it.
Well, now you went all dark, because that covering your head with a thing while you eat something is, oh, sorry, it just made me like throw something across the room. You may have heard the clatter. Yeah, it's tragic.
It was a little box of tooth floss.
Yeah, tooth flossers. Oh, there are so many things that I don't understand, and I never will.
We'll figure it out, Marty.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Give us some time. We'll be right back with more Bewildered. We don't say this enough. We are so glad you're a Bewildered listener, and we're hoping you might want to go to the next level with us, by which I mean if you rate and review the podcast, it helps new people find us so we can keep bewildering new souls, and you know how much we love that. Ratings are very much appreciated. Obviously, the more stars you give us, the more appreciation is forthcoming. Reviews are quite simply heaven, and we read everyone and exclaim over them, and we just love you all. Mwah! Change, eh?
It sure does keep happening.
I feel like there's something that you, Martha Beck, have created that will help us understand how change affects us and how to manage it.
Oh, by coincidence, now that you mention it, I have. It's called The Change Cycle. Mm. It's about four aspects of the whole process of change. And we've put the information together in one handy place so that the people can refer to it when they're going through change.
And you know what else? We also made podcast episodes about each of the four squares in the cycle that are also on this new page that we've made for the peoples.
Well, how remarkable is that? All right, you can find out all about the change cycle at marthabeck.com/change. Who else is trying to figure something out this day?
Well, someone. How's that? Someone, because today, as she segued awkwardly, is a Bewild Files episode, Marty, where we listen to the listeners. Ah. It's about time.
Yes.
With our eyes closed. Ah. And today we're listening to Caitlin.
Hello, Martha and Ro. I am such a huge fan of your Bewildered podcast. I just want to say thank you for letting me be here. So I'm currently in the process of transitioning my once for-profit business into a not-for-profit business, which is something I've been wanting to do for a very long time. And I find that a lot of people in my life don't really quite understand my dreams. They don't understand my goals. I mean, the important people do, right? But I find it hard to not get lost in the noise of the culture, so to speak. So I was wondering if you had any advice or any streams of consciousness about how I can maintain my own integrity within my dreams without allowing other people's ramblings to interfere with that. Thank you.
Do we have any streams of consciousness? Oh, you better believe we do, Caitlin.
Oh, Caitlin, to ask the two of us for a stream of consciousness.
You had us at stream of.
I love this question. I really do. I identify with it, and I think most people will, because I have spent so many hours, months, years, probably 10,000 hours of my life trying so hard to get the people I love and who I know love me to understand me, but it didn't always feel like it worked.
Yeah, I think there's such a strong, like, relatable feeling of wanting to be understood in our, especially in like our mission, in what we're, you know, and that's what I hear from Caitlin. And, you know, to be seen in the way that we see ourselves, right? Yeah. Our intentions, for our intentions and our good intentions to be understood. And that feels so important when it's the people we love.
Yeah, there's so many. I've had so many clients who are really quite clear on their own path, but they were like, why does he not understand me? Why do they not understand me? And it was a separate painful issue. Yeah, this idea that those that they love did not understand.
So why do we want this so badly, do you reckon? Like, what idea are we attaching to in wanting to be understood?
Well, you know what we say, that the culture brings people to consensus and nature brings us to our senses. Mm. I think we are such social creatures that consensus gives us lots of comfort. And if you're really going to go out on your own mission that's individual and completely unique for you and all the universe, you can't have that consensus, really. That dreams can be quite diaphanous. And that means you kind of have to go forward alone. And we want the consensus.
Right. Consensus feels safe. We, in a way, like we're trying to build a culture around us when we ask for consensus on our dreams.
Right.
Or maybe join one that exists. But one or the other, you know, it's about a feeling of safety and approval.
Yeah. And it's interesting the ways I've seen this as I was thinking through the topic. One time, I mean, this is as far away culturally as I can imagine this question coming up in two different places, but it was still the same question. I once, in the dark of night in the South African wilderness, by a crackling fire, I had sort of a fortune-telling session with a sangoma, which is what they call shamans in the local tribes. And so in the way that they do it, it's called throwing the bones. So this woman had a little bag of bones and sticks and I don't know what all, shells, and she would throw them and then she would read things from these shells. And it was very strange. It was very unexpected. And she would say something and she seemed a little bit confused. Like she was telling me, you deal with thousands of people, but you never leave your house. And she was looking at me as if she was confused. And then she started to gesture and she brought up a bunch of other people from the Shangaan tribe there in northern South Africa. She was from Mozambique. And she would throw the bones and then she would say something and then the translator would say it. And then all the people behind her they said something that sounded to me like Javo. And they said it every time she spoke out loud. And I asked someone later, what were they saying? And they told me they're saying, we agree. Hmm. So it was like she was going out on a limb, because she did. She told me some pretty trippy stuff. I wrote a whole book about, you know, the wisdom of the ancients because of that throwing the bones session. And she knew what she was doing. She was no phony, but she still needed the agreement of her people. She needed a backup bench to agree with her so that she could dare to say the things that were coming through her.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
It was. It really was. Do you think that's what a Greek chorus is about in the ancient Greek plays? That there's a chorus of people talking to the hero?
Yeah, so there's usually, I mean, we've talked about this before because it's such a strong representation of culture, but yeah, you'd have like half a dozen people on the stage representing the whole community. And I definitely think that the urge to conform to a culture goes back at least, I mean, it probably goes back to whenever, like, you know, before we even really became human. But, you know, I think that the thing is that when we are looking for approval, like, and that's the sort of outward sign of being understood, right?
Right.
You want to be understood and approved of, because I think the only way we can conceptualize of not having that is to be judged.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And being judged by the people around us is another face of people, don't get me. But, you know, like, so, all right, so this is quite a deep need that we seem to have.
Yeah.
And it is a social sort of, it's a component of our social nature.
I agree.
But where human culture is as a whole, looking around, opening a newspaper, haven't opened a newspaper this century.
You know me, just open the newspaper as I suck on my cigarette.
The way we do culture with each other according to this sort of need is fucked. So let's look at alternatives.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we do have that deep need for a deep bench. Do you say that in Australia, a deep bench?
It's some sort of sporting metaphor.
No, it means a very deep bench where you can just relax into a cushy. No, it really does.
Lovely.
It's a sports metaphor, as if I knew anything about sports. But it's having a lot of people who can step in for you if you get tired or injured or whatever. And the people who see our souls kind of feel like the bench, the deep bench for our mission. And so if we don't feel that understanding coming from the people closest to us, I think there's almost a sense of of near panic, deprivation, of backup.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And
I have to say something, Marty. I feel like I can't stay quiet on this because I feel like in some ways our listeners do see our souls and I need them to see you in a way that I don't think many people have ever seen you. And you said you don't know anything about sports, but I happen to have been in the room on occasion when NFL football has been played and something really weird happens to you at that time and you start saying words that I don't understand and you start you're just like watching these things and describing what they're doing and making prognostications. It's so completely other.
That's so interesting.
From you. Anyway, I just needed to say that.
I was so sure that you were going to talk about how last week I was giving a speech and I was on Zoom and it was a really big corporate event. And so I put on a suit. And I came in. Yeah, you came in and I got so hot in the middle of the speech that there was no way to like jump up and fan myself or anything. So gently and I think very subtly, I removed my pants and my socks. And Ro came into the room as I was giving my speech in a blazer and my underpants, and she took pictures. And
in fact, I think we might need to provide listeners with the photographic evidence of this because it is very funny. And
I've never seen the pictures. I just saw you take them.
Yeah, you might not see them. You don't know where the show notes can be found.
If you do, all right. Look, it's my truth. What can I say?
Stop getting us off topic.
Oh, sorry. Okay. What does the culture say about this whole idea of being understood and how it's hard when people you love don't?
Yeah, I think that I think the culture says that it's obvious and natural that the people who love you will get you. It's automatic, right?
Oh, yeah.
But it's not. I don't think that that's true. I think it's often the people who love you don't get you at all and also have the strongest ideas about who you should be.
That is so. In fact, that is absolutely true. The more people have loved me in my life, the more they've tried to get me to understand them. And the more I've loved them, the more I've tried to force them to understand me. So it gets to be quite contentious even. Yeah, this effort to make ourselves understood.
So if we have these missions and, I mean, mission is a very kind of grandiose word in a way, but like let's just use it. Let's just be grandiose. Fuck it. And we're going forward in service of this mission. What if no one ever really gets us in this? What if there's no individual, I'm talking about us in the loose sort of way, one.
Right.
What if no one ever gets one? Is it still worth it?
I think it is. I mean, I think some of the greatest things in the history of the world have come out of people who just said, nobody understands this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Mm. I think a lot of the great teachers like Buddha and Jesus were doing that. And I thought about Van Gogh, if you want to be technical. And then I thought, yeah, but he cut off his ear and then he shot himself, so maybe not. But then he had Theo, his brother. Sorry, I'm getting off topic. I think that none of us is totally understood, and the geniuses sort of bring our attention to the fact that they went forward even though they were not completely understood, and there's a kind of inherent loneliness in the great thinkers, well, in all of us, you know, because no two of us is the same. So I think we all need people who love us, and we all need people who get us. But here's the thing. I don't think they have to be the same people.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we need to find someone who can get the parts of you that matter and that different people for different parts can be okay.
Yeah, because I think we've all had the experience of being loved but not understood by a person, and maybe the experience of being understood by people who don't even really know us. I mean, I really think that sometimes the people, like you read the book I wrote after that Sangoma gave me the reading, and you were in Australia, and you understood it much better than the editor of the book that I was working with, right? Like I when I met you and you started talking about it, I knew you understood that part of me completely. Mm. And the people around me when I was writing did not. So it was a weird experience of, okay, here's someone I've never met who really understands me. So that's one way it can go.
Then you married me.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I think we all experience this, like these two factors, being understood and being loved. I think they are on a sliding scale and they don't necessarily relate. Where have you felt this mismatch between being understood and being loved?
I just had a thought.
Ooh.
When, like, Caitlin talked about the people who matter and, you know, and then this idea of the people who love us deeply. And I just thought, it's a perfect Anita Franco line for this. Where she says, there's a crowd of people gathered in every person. There are so many roles that we play. And you've decided to love me for eternity. And I'm still deciding who I want to be today. And so we, like, often the people who love us over a lifetime if we're lucky, right?
Yeah.
And we are so many different people over the course of a lifetime.
Yeah, and changing all the time.
Changing all the time. And this is what I was just thinking, is that I am a person of great enthusiasms, but I'm quite what's the word for that when you're like a dilettante? I'm a dilettante of great enthusiasms. So I just I get really obsessed and then I move on and get really obsessed with something else. And so I was thinking about when I was doing my master's in international politics, it was a very kind of a group of very idealistic people on the whole. And, you know, we were just constantly reading about, you know, all the genocides going on and, you know, wars being fought and injustices and all of this in these sort of far-flung corners of the world where no one was getting, you know, there wasn't media coverage. And I can remember, like, talking to one of my closest friends and just being like, why don't you want to do something about this? You know, and she's like, Jesus, I just came over for a cup of tea and you're telling me I need to go to Sudan? Like, and I was just like, but how can you not feel compelled to? And then I finished my master's and I still haven't been to Sudan or made anything better there remotely. If anything, I've probably made things worse just now saying that. But anyway, so that's the time when I didn't feel like people got me, but I have to hasten to add I've been several people since then.
Yeah, I had a sort of group misunderstanding, a mass misunderstanding, if you will.
Misunderstanding.
When I left Mormonism, everybody I'd known growing up was very, very into that belief system. And the fact that I would leave it, I'm sure they still love me, but it was inconceivable. It did not fit into the same universe in our minds. And my mind changed and theirs didn't. And it was like, okay, I'll love you from here. But it was rough.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking about how I don't understand my own son. I love Adam, but I don't understand him. His Down syndrome makes him really, really different. And there are parts of him that I know are beyond me, but he gets parts of you. Like, he understands you in some ways better than I do.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And I haven't, you know, I've known Adam less than a decade, but we have a very deep understanding of the places where we're similar. And one of them I know is that Adam and I both care about stuff being good quality, and we both like to research before we buy things, research, find something that's good quality, decide on it, then we stick with it. We're both the same. And so he comes to me with his Christmas list because he's just like, I can't trust you other people with understanding how important it is that I get the right adapter for my PlayStation.
Yeah, I don't get that. Yeah. Karen doesn't get it, but you so get it.
I feel so grateful to have Adam in our family because, yeah, you two really just don't get
and
me
yet,
in this way.
Every time he gets me a gift, it's weirdly, deeply understanding of where I am in my life,
So he gets you, you just don't get him.
Exactly, but he gets me in this way that I can't quite understand. I don't know how he does it. He just always, like, the day that something bad happens, he has a card that's exactly for that day. And yeah. It's just, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, he's uncanny. Yeah. So what about you and me? I mean, what do you think about where do we have places where we don't get each other?
Oh, I'm going to put the rubber where on. Wait, put your the rubber where you're. Oh, why do I do this? You're going to put your money where your mouth is. We say that. And I'm not going to
where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah, like just make something out of
the
that.
Rubber on your mouth.
Oh, God. Why do I do this to myself? Okay. Honestly, like speaking of
living Mormon.
It's
where your mouth meets the road.
It's where your mouth meets the road. I do think that, like, no one really, if you did not grow up in a cult, you really can't understand what it's like to have that as your formative, as your foundation. Oh, it's very, very different from being raised in a secular culture, for me. Really weird. And I know, like, people who grew up that way get it, and people who didn't, including even my darling you, don't get it.
No, I don't. And I feel like that particular cult is especially hard to understand because it looks sort of normal. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, and so it doesn't, the depth of difference is I'm still learning to comprehend it, and probably always will be.
Yeah, and it was more intense for me because there are layers and layers of that culture, and I was right at the center of the weirdest part.
Yeah.
So it's not every Mormon in the world who's like that, but did that. So what about you? Where do you feel misunderstood by moi?
Well, I think you know perfectly well that you don't understand, don't seem willing to even try to understand me in my passion for hashtag van life.
Oh, God.
I want to live in a van and you don't respect it.
I do not want to live in a van. And I don't want you to live in a van. I'm just going
to
say.
Do you not want me to live in a van?
I will say, though, I'm gonna meet you halfway because I see your whole fantasy is of living in a van, driving around with Ani DiFranco, okay? Because you never lose your passion for Ani DiFranco. And we went to an Ani DiFranco concert and I got it. I understand. I didn't get that part of you. I get it.
There's no songs about living in vans that I'm aware of in Ani's work.
Oh, I'm sure you can find something. I think there is no topic upon which Ani DiFranco has not written.
There's plenty of topics about driving and being on
the road.
Well,
there you go.
Yeah.
She put it in your head. I blame her. But I love her now. So I loved her all the time. I just didn't get why you were obsessed with her. And now I do.
Aw.
So, yeah. Sometimes
thanks for loving me and getting me in that way.
Oh, thanks for loving me and getting me and loving me and not getting me sometimes. And loving me anyway.
Yes. Good point.
Karen doesn't. It goes all the different ways. We all understand different things about each other.
Yeah.
So what do we do about it, Roey Joe?
Well, I think we will get to the bottom of this and we will figure it out, but we just need to take a little break.
Hello, the lovely peoples. This is Martha, inviting you to a free masterclass that I have made called 5 Paths to Your Purpose. Probably the most common question I get from people is, how do I find my purpose? Why don't I feel that I'm on purpose? Well, it turns out there are certain things you have to do to find your purpose, and I broke them down into 5, and I made a little masterclass about it. So if you'd like to see it, just go to marthabeck.com/purpose, and you will be able to watch it without any charge at all.
So, Marty, I think it's fair at this point to say that it's likely that at some point we're going to come to the realization that some people love you but won't get you, don't get
they
you
won't,
or
yeah.
won't get you.
That's what we're saying to Caitlin. That's the sad truth is it's just you have to accept the fact that it's really not always going to happen. In fact, it will always not happen to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do? We very deeply want to create a culture or join a culture of consensus in this area. So what we try to do on Bewildered is connect with our nature, like come to our senses. Where do we find our senses here when the longing is so deep?
This is where it's really tricky because we can dodge and weave and try to avoid it. Because the natural thing to do when you've reached something that you wish you had and you can't have it is to go into grief, into the grieving process. That's how we let go of things that were that we really wanted that can't come to us wholly. And the first stage of that is denial. So we can bounce around for decades going to different people saying, oh, this person loves and understands me. These people love me and they understand me. Oh, I get it. And I did a bit of that. And I've watched people do it for decades at a time.
Or even, like, potentially, I imagine, turning away from love because we think that love without, I thought he understood me, but he didn't.
You don't get me.
Yeah.
And I think kids go through a time where they want their parents to understand and then they try desperately or they back away or they rebel or do anything to try to bring those two things together. Maybe that's the bargaining phase that is part of the grieving process. You think, okay, well, if I did this, if I managed it that way, that's the second part after denial. And if you're really honest with yourself, eventually you get to grief, the sadness part of it. I'm sitting here with a person I love. They don't understand me. And that sucks. Oh, and I left out anger. Anger is a big part. I think it comes before sadness for some people. It all is in a big mush is what it is. It's like being in a cement mixer of all these feelings. So there's denial, bargaining, anger, sadness, and then finally acceptance. And when you come out into acceptance after going through all the other things, your soul is, your mind, your heart, your soul, they're all sort of tempered and made softer and more gentle by the process of grieving. It's actually a productive process. Is just that it's not fun all the time and we'd like to avoid it, but
we tend to prefer fun to not fun,
generally speaking. Yes. Yeah. Although, and so, like, if somebody comes to me and says, I really want this person to understand me, and I have met them both, then I'm like, oh, I don't think they're ever going to understand you. And what's in front of you is a little spate of grieving, but you'll be okay. They're like, oh, no. But I can tell you from experience, it's better than, you know, busting a gut to try to be understood by the people you love or by hiding your true self so that you're always grieving the death of your own true nature because you've sold it out to feel or to pretend that you're loved and understood by all the same people.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got another piece of this, I think, which is there are people who get you.
Yes.
They may not know you. Hashtag Ani DeFranco. She gets me. She gets
she
me.
Does.
A lot. Mm-hmm. People who get you may not exist. I know a number of fictional characters who get me very deeply. I appreciate that from them. Mm-hmm. And for that matter, people who get you might be dead, might have been dead for centuries.
Ooh. Or they
Rumi.
Will be someday. Rumi. I mean, when
you better believe
when
it
Hafiz
will.
Says, troubled, then stay with me, for I am not. From the distance of a millennium, I will bend a flame into the darkness to light the candle in your soul. It's like, he gets me. Mm-hmm. And he loves me. He's just dead.
Yeah, that's all right. There's worse things than being dead.
Yeah, there better be, because we're all headed there. That's a really important point. And when you start to accept these truths, that the people who get you may not know you, that the people who get you may not exist, that they may be dead, and that the people who love you don't have to understand you, that is when you are in a position to meet the world as the creator of your own destiny. Because you'll be able to love those who love you, even though they'll never get you. And you'll understand that you'll never totally understand them. So it can make you more compassionate, make you listen more deeply. But I think the most important thing is that you realize that these two variables are not associated, being understood and being loved. Mm. You need both, but that you need to decouple them so that each of them can come from any direction or from any person.
Isn't that wild? I feel like there's something in this that is like pointing to such a huge level of spiritual maturity, you know, to be able to love and be loved without an expectation of being understood is so, it's amazing how mind-blowing it is. And yet, and, you know, we're only talking partially, right? It's not like you're going to go and get married and live out your days with someone who you don't share a language with or anything like that. Right. Like, it's not, I mean, total.
People but have will done always, that.
Yeah, sure. And I'm sure they were great. whatever.
Fun.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
But it's so interesting to think what, who, like, who would I be if I could let go of that longing? Right? Or, you know, say I have my mission and there are people who are so important to me who don't understand my mission. That's cool. Because I can believe it in it myself enough to release myself from that longing for the culture, the culture's validation of what I'm doing.
And then you actually become a leader. You become a leader of the of somebody who's deeply comfortable in walking out beyond the culture, allowing for mission and not expecting understanding.
I think we all consist of so many different facets in ourselves. We're so many selves, like Ani DeFranco said. And it, so it's like we have thousands of different faces all looking out in slightly different directions, you know, and there's, it's almost impossible that we could meet a single person who could get each single part of us in that way. But maybe we can find one person who can understand one part of us, like Adam and I connecting deeply in our appreciation of good quality things. and then maybe someone else can understand this part of me. And, you know, you can talk to ex-Mormons about that part. And then, you know, maybe that's enough ultimately.
I think it's enough, and I think ultimately it becomes everything, because it's reminding me of the metaphor of Indra's web, which is a Buddhist metaphor about the structure of the universe, where it's this infinite three-dimensional spider's web, and at each intersection there is a jewel with infinite faces, and in each of the infinite faces of all these infinite jewels is reflected the entirety of the rest of infinity. So ultimately, like, the more and more and more you get in touch with who you are at the core, the more you you understand your own uniqueness in projecting out a certain light and reflecting it from certain other people. But also there seems the entirety of it holds and understands everything. So that I think as you move toward losing that sense of needing to be separate and different, as you lose your ego. Sorry, this is a bit Buddhist.
No, this but is really cool.
What happens is that you become Indra's web itself. You stop being the one little jewel. You become the whole web. And then you understand the little parts of the infinite little parts of yourself. And you understand everyone else's infinite parts. And you understand that all along you all reflected each other very beautifully.
Dude, I love it because it sort of has that Zen paradox kind of flavor to it, where it's like, if I can let go of this idea, I will come to the recognition of how profoundly we are all connected, how profoundly one we all are.
Yeah, I will never completely understand anyone, and no one will ever completely understand me until we realize that we are both understanding itself.
Oh, that's so good. Oh, that's so good. All right. Oh. I need a cigarette. So it's like back here on Earth, it's like X loves me and doesn't get me. Y gets me, but we're not close.
That's all right. Okay.
You know, Z is dead people who get me, and I love them.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they feel about me. And A is a dog who understands everything and nothing.
That's the koan of the dog that understands nothing. You just double zend yourself and you didn't even know it.
Dude.
Yeah. Be the dog who understands everything and nothing. And then
I am that dog.
Me too. And I think if you can accept that and actually play with it and stop clenching to the idea of what love and understanding are, there's more of a joyful desire to go exploring our true nature, other people's true nature, the whole experience of life.
So feel loved here, feel understood there, and
stay wild.
We hope you're enjoying Bewildered. If you're in the USA and want to be notified when a new episode comes out, text the word WILD to 570-873-0144. We're also on Instagram. Our handle is Bewildered Podcast. You can follow us to get updates, hear funny snippets and outtakes, and chat with other fans of the show. Bewildered is produced by Scott Forster with support from the brilliant team at MBI. And remember, if you're having fun, please rate and review. And stay wild.
You know, what I'm seeing out in the world is a lot of fear and a growing amount of despair. Maybe you're feeling that way too, because the ways our culture has taught us to navigate the world, to navigate our lives, they are failing us. We need a new language. We need a new set of tools to find our way individually and as a group. And I know we can still do this. I put everything I do know about it into Wayfinder Life Coach Training. And the tools that I teach there are to help people redefine how we relate to each other, how we make a living, how we do community. We can only change the world for the better if we redefine how we think. And the world needs Wayfinders now more than ever. So please go to marthabeck.com and you'll find your way.